My name is Ken Watson. I live in Swillington now, and actually born in Swillington, so I've never moved out of the village. My father worked locally on the farm, and I went to the local school and then 3 years at Pitman's College in Leeds, then went to work for the National Coal Board. I followed that on by National Service in the RAF and came back to the Coal Board for a short period of time, and then went to work for the Regent Oil Company for about 18 months, then returned to the Coal Board and carried on working there until 1989.
My name is Pat Watson and I'm 68 years old. I was born in Little Preston, so I've lived in this area all my life. I went to the local school and then to Castleford Grammar School. After doing O-levels, I went to work at the Leeds Permanent Building Society head office in Leeds. I stayed there until after I was married and had my first child. I met Ken really when I was 15 years old, although I had known him vaguely all my life. And we met one Christmas, carol singing with our local church.
And we both started at the school on the same day, same school in 1943.
We are both only children. And because both our parents, sets of parents, had problems, we stayed basically to support them. My dad was a carpenter. He was trained as an undertaker and carpenter, that sort of thing. But he basically worked on housing, doing roofs and things like that. And then he was in the Navy during the war. So he came back, obviously, at the end of the war and went back to his original job. My family is an established Yorkshire family. They basically come from the Methley area. Both my father and mother originated there.
Pat's grandfather worked down the pit until he was 70, and he played in the 1906 Rugby Cup final, and he's there in the programme in the Hall of Fame, and they beat Swindon 5-0 in the final. He's listed there as a forward in the programme. Great big strapping chap he was, and I say, and the reason he worked down the pit until he was 70, he only had one son, Laurie, who was away in Burma. And he vowed he would not give up working down the pit until Laurie returned from Burma. And in due course, at the end of the war, Laurie returned from Burma, and then he retired, by which time he was 70. My father's side, they came from North Yorkshire. My father was actually christened at St Mary's Church in Scarborough, but there is evidence they've travelled all over, because on the Lowther estate at Swillington House, my grandfather was a gardener and woodman, and my grandmother was a maid there for the Lowther family. Now, on my mother's side, they came from Kippox, and from a very big family, 11 children. Her father, had he have not liked his drink as much as he did, may well have been one of the richest people locally. He ran the first bus from Kippox to Castleford on a Saturday night. I had a lorry doing haulage. When people were picking coal off the dirt stacks, he'd buy it off them and then resell it. Had an ice cream business. My mother was born in 1911, and they lived down what they call Waddington Row at Kippox, and very hard times and that, very little money for anything. But anyway, as fast as the money came in, it went out via the pub, unfortunately. And because my mother witnessed that, what heavy drinking could do, my mother and some of her brothers just shunned drinking completely. Would have nothing to do with it whatsoever, because they'd seen the damage that heavy drinking could do in a family, and they just walked away from it. She, as a young woman, worked in farm service at Hurst Farm at Preston Corner, which now is, the son has it now, at Breck's Farm, and she worked there in service. She cleaned and cooked and baked for them from 7 at morning till 11 at night. Extremely hard work, but on the other hand, being from a large family with not a lot of food around, she often talked that she'd come home from school on an afternoon and go back to school the following morning with as much food in her stomach as she had when she came home at 4 o'clock the day before. Now, while she worked hard at Hurst Farm, she got some extremely good food, and she felt that that was sort of a blessing in disguise. It absolutely made her, and she died in 2001 when she was 90. And she did general work. She did all sorts of things. She did took in washing so she could always pay the rent, cleaning. She worked in a clothing factory. And she loved working on the land, on the farm where my dad worked, potato picking, pea pulling, rhubarb cutting. She just loved working on the land. In fact, although Astley Farm isn't there anymore, was gobbled up by the open cast, if you look around, there's still quite a number of farms. The first memory I have of Woodlesford Station is that my father telling me the story of the Mount Pleasant pit, the headgear there. It came second-hand from Darlington, because that's sort of Cumbria, the northeast, where the Lowther family came from. Anyway, it arrived at Woodlesford Station, and my grandfather and father offloaded it from the railway onto a timber wagon with 8 horses in it and brought it up from Woodlesford up to Mount Pleasant. And that's how it was built there and served as the man-riding shaft for the Primrose and Victoria pits.
Just remind us where Mount Pleasant pit is, because I don't quite know where it is.
Mount Pleasant pit is on sort of right on the border of Sullington before it sort of starts to go down the hill to Gaff the Bridge. It's on that where the junction of White House Lane is. I mean, people who live around there will remember it. You used to have thousands of daffodils in the pit yard, but it was purely a man riding shaft. The thing was, 2 men with 8 horses. When you think 8 horses, 4 sets of 2 horses and a timber wagon and all this heavy gear and that, and they moved it. I mean, obviously, I can't remember them doing that. I wasn't around at the time, but that's what happened.
So Woodlesford was the nearest bit of railway then that they could get a heavy bit of kit like
yeah.
that
oh, yes.
to Swinnington.
Oh, yes, you know, lots of stuff. For the brewery, used to come into the sidings and was offloaded, you know, sort of for the brewery and for elsewhere.
It's fascinating to me that they used horses. Even in the 1920s, yeah. You'd have thought they'd have used some kind of truck.
Well, because the tractor didn't really come in until about mid-1940s. But again, according to my grandfather, at the start of the First World War, about 1914, officers used to come round to farms and say, those shire horses there, we want all those shire horses, or we want half of them, or 2 of them, whatever. And you couldn't protest. They were just taken. And those horses would be picked up and taken down to Woodlesford Station, loaded into trucks, and then they would be transported. As many men would be on the way to France for the last journeys, it were, sort of.
Did any of those shire horses come back?
Well, that I don't know. I would doubt it. In fact, I would imagine, as attitudes were then to animal welfare, even if they were still alive at the end of the war, they'd probably be slaughtered. Because, as they declared, the authorities, it wasn't worth bringing dead men home. It certainly wouldn't be worth bringing live horses home because of the cost. And this is why they argue lots of soldiers in the First World War were buried in the field, because it didn't justify the cost of bringing them home. So one can only imagine the horses would be slaughtered and probably sold off as horsemeat. The first memory I have of anything to do with Woodlesford Station was that one of my mother's brothers, my Uncle Jack, he was in the Navy in the war. And I remember walking down the hill towards Woodlesford, and he was walking up the hill with a kit bag on his shoulder. And he had these funny green things in his hand. And he was coming home on leave, and I didn't know what they were. And he gave me 1 or 2, and I took them home and gave them to my mother. And they turned out to be bananas, and that was the first time I'd ever seen a banana in my life, sir.
And where'd he brought them from?
Well, obviously, the ship that he was on, I think he was on a minesweeper, there must have been somewhere into the areas where they grow bananas, and they'd loaded them on the ship, And it sticks in my mind to this day. Every time I see a banana, I just think of seeing him with these bananas in his hand. Yeah. Because lots of people, you know, coming home and leave, used to come to Uddlesford Station because there weren't all sort of national expresses and things like that. And that was the only way to travel from wherever, if your ship docked or, you know, where your regiment was, come by train. I mean, I can remember when, even in 1956, when I went in the RAF for national service, we were given all these passes to go by train. I don't remember going to RAF Cardington, and when we got to Leicester to change trains, and were all these new young lads, I wasn't quite 19, and I'd only ever been out of Yorkshire 3 times, and I was nearly 19 years old. And so I went on this train, and we got to Leicester to get off and catch another train to Cardington. And we're all milling around, absolutely lost in the days. And someone said, "Is that the train to Cardington over there?" I said, "Well, I don't know. It was a steam train. I'll go and ask the driver." Oh, probably it was the laugh that he got every week. I went and said, "Is this the train to Cardington?" He says, "I've no idea." So when I turn me back, him and the fireman, probably that's this week's laugh, sort of.
winding us up.
Anyway, in due course, we got there to Cardington. But then, all the time, I went to Cardington, and then we were sent to do square bashing at West Kirby. Never even heard of West Kirby. We put on a train, steam train, with a packet of sandwiches, an orange, and a packet of chewing gum, to go to West Kirby. And I could have been going to the moon, for all I knew. Anyway, we arrived on, which is on the Wirral, we arrived on the Wirral. It was dark, it was the 9th of December, being shouted at and bawled and to get a move on and, you know, move faster and get off the train and that. And in due course, we arrived at RAF West Kirby. Did our 8-week square bashing. Again, by train, travelled to RAF Hereford for 4 weeks training. And first time I came home on leave, we caught the 10 minutes to 10 train from Leeds. Now that train had run right throughout the war at the same time, and we got on, and when I say a train packed, it was absolutely solid of soldiers, sailors and airmen. And we stood up, and oh, we must have been going 2 to 3 hours, and I managed to get a fire bucket to sit on. And it was just heaven to sit on this fire bucket. And I sat on there. And when we got to RAF Hereford, it was foggy. And this would be about 5 o'clock at morning. But we were on parade at 6 o'clock. Lorries met us, took us to the camp. So we basically got washed and shaved. And we're out on the for parade at 6 o'clock. Pat's uncle, who worked on Uddlesford Station, he was in the army. And he used to go on the 10 to 10 train, that very same train, because he was in Hereford. So it ran all through the war at 10 minutes to 10.
I went with my mother to Bristol when my father was in the Navy. We went to visit him there because he had a cousin there and he was on leave there. And we travelled from Uddlesford Station into Leeds. And from Leeds, I remember standing on the platform then in Leeds with my mother waiting for the train to take us to Bristol. It was a long time before I made as long a journey again. I remember standing on the platform, holding my mother's hand, and waiting for it coming and hearing it in the distance. But I don't remember much about the actual journey on the train. I think I was too excited, actually. I'd never been on a train before. And it was a long, long journey all the way to Bristol for a small girl.